This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Some of your clothing with labels that say Made in the USA, or Made in Saipan, USA, or Made in Northern Mariana Islands, USA, may have been made in sweatshops on islands thousands of miles away by garment workers who were nearly indentured servants. Efforts to reform those conditions were repeatedly stalled in Congress in efforts led by Congressman Tom DeLay and lobbyist Jack Abramoff. How DeLay and Abramoff did it and what the consequences have been is the subject of an article in the current edition of Ms. Magazine titled Paradise Lost, Greed, Sex Slavery, Forced Abortions, and Right-Wing Moralists. My guests are the reporter, Rebecca Claren, and the executive editor of Ms., Catherine Spiller. The Northern Mariana Islands were one of Jack Abramoff's first big lobbying accounts. Located in the Pacific, the islands have been a U.S. territory since 1976 and are exempt from U.S. labor and immigration laws. The Marianas are a territory of the United States. What advantages did that give the Marianas economically in terms of having clothing factories that then sold their garments in the United States mainland?
It meant that the clothing manufactured on the Marianas could say made in the USA. They could be then sold in the United States without any quota restrictions on the amount of clothing that was being sold. So it was estimated at one time roughly $2 billion a year of garments were being sold in the U.S. that had been manufactured in the Marianas. No quotas and no tariffs, because it was like bringing garments in from Texas or California to New York. So no tariffs, no quotas, made in the USA label, substandard minimum wages, and no real control over working conditions.
Rebecca, why are there so many clothing factories in the Marianas? And maybe you can mention the names of some of the companies that have factories there.
They're subcontractors. Companies like Ann Taylor, J. Jill, The Gap, Ralph Lauren, they don't actually manufacture their own clothing there. They subcontract to different companies there. And they do this because, for two reasons. Because the Mariana Islands are part of the United States, the labels on the clothing that's produced there can say made in the USA. And yet they can do this because it's this different situation and different dynamic there. The islands have a different set of immigration and labor laws than pertain to places in the States. So they have a substandard minimum wage, and they have an expansive guest worker program where they bring women from poor Southeast Asian countries to work there. So that means that they can produce the clothes a lot more cheaply than they could in, like, California, for example.
The Marianas were a client of lobbyist Jack Abramoff's. In fact, the Marianas were described as the client that really helped make his reputation, that really helped establish him. What did they hire him to do?
Well, they hired Abramoff in 1995, the government of the Northern Mariana Islands, because by then enough information had begun to come out and some members of Congress began to push for reforms to increase the minimum wage and to establish stricter enforcement of labor laws and to close these loopholes in the immigration controls that had led to the flooding in of foreign guest workers who, at the whim of their employer, could be deported. So they couldn't even complain if the work conditions were sweatshop-type conditions, which they were. So there had begun to be a real move for reform. And Abramoff was brought in because of his relationship to the leadership, especially in the House. And he delivered for them. He and his team, over several years, brought in over $11 million in lobbying fees. But he immediately set about to make sure that any of these reform bills that would pass, say, the Senate, and frequently, by the way, they did unanimously pass the Senate bipartisan support for increasing the minimum wage and correcting these abuses, that he would make sure they were killed in the House. And he did that by developing a close relationship with Tom DeLay, who would make sure that these bills died in the House Resources Committee and never made it to the floor for a vote.
Now, one of the tactics that Jack Abramoff used was, to help postpone or kill reform legislation was to fund trips by congressmen to the Mariana Islands, junkets, basically. What did he try to accomplish with these junkets, and what were they like?
Well, he even bragged in correspondence to the governor of the Northern Mariana Islands that his most effective lobbying tool was arranging these junkets, many of them all expense paid. Over 100 members of Congress or their staff and families ended up going on these trips in the mid to late 90s. It's a beautiful island, by all accounts, a resort atmosphere, beautiful seas. And that's mostly, of course, where these trips ended up, although they had to take the obligatory visit to one of the prearranged, approved garment factories. So they only were allowed entry into model factories. Tom DeLay was one of the recipients of one of these trips, he and his daughter and his wife. And over time, six different of his top aides, back and forth, some of them to the islands, all so that he could speak firsthand, I guess, about what he had seen there.
So Tom DeLay ended up working against reform in the Mariana Islands. What were his tactics to get congressmen to not vote for reform?
Well, Tom DeLay was in a leadership position for the Republicans in the House and had tremendous influence over whether bills would be scheduled for a vote, so that if somehow these reform measures made it through the Resources Committee, although they didn't, Tom DeLay was always there as the backup so that if something came out of committee, he could simply make sure that the vote in the House was never scheduled. And without the vote in the House, the Senate's actions didn't make any difference because you have to have both houses to pass legislation. And in this case, the legislative efforts were focused on increasing the minimum wage and establishing U.S. government control over the immigration system in the Marianas. So in all cases, 29 different bills were killed in the House Resources Committee, some of which had been passed unanimously by the Senate. So it was a very effective strategy that Abramoff employed, focusing on the Resources Committee. Most of the Republican members of that committee, by the way, made trips to the Marianas. So it was a very effective strategy, always knowing that if it got through committee, Tom DeLay was there to make sure nothing would really pass.
I just wanted to add that not everyone who went to the Mariana Islands walked away feeling good about the situation. Frank Murkowski, former senator from Alaska, he went and was appalled by what he saw and came back to D.C. and drafted reform legislation that then ended up passing unanimously in the Senate.
Well, Rebecca makes a good point because in both cases, in not only in the Senate, and Senator Murkowski was the leading proponent of reforms in the Senate, but in the House, too, there was tremendous bipartisan support for reforms. In fact, one of the bills had so many co-sponsors in the House that it was such a clear majority that if they'd simply taken a vote on it, it would have passed, and we would have had new minimum wage requirements for the Marianas and new immigration requirements. But that's how effective the Abramoff DeLay web of influence was, that they could, even when a bill had majority support in the House, they could kill it in committee to make sure that these reforms never became law.
Now, Tom DeLay told the Washington Post that the Marianas were a petri dish for capitalism. And on one of DeLay's trips to the Marianas, he said, "When one of my closest and dearest friends, Jack Abramoff, your most able representative in Washington, D.C., invited me to the islands, I wanted to see firsthand the free market success and the progress and reform you have made." And then DeLay went on to praise the governor, and he said, "You are a shining light for what is happening in the Republican Party, and you represent everything that is good about what we're trying to do in America in leading the world in the free market system." And Grover Norquist, founder of Americans for Tax Reform and one of the most powerful conservative leaders in Washington, promoted the Marianas as models of free enterprise. Rebecca, you went to the Marianas to see what the conditions were actually like at the clothing factories there. Why don't you describe some of the things that you saw?
Well, Martin Van Krogh, the photographer, and I were able to get into one of the factories. And you have to assume that because we were granted a tour, it is one of the very best factories there. And indeed, it was well lit. There was room in the aisles, but the women there are working really long hours, often 20 hours a day. They almost seem as if they are a part of the machinery. They are so intent on the job at hand. The air is thick. It's quite dusty. Under OSHA regulations, they should all have masks, but people told me they never have that unless there was a tour that day for OSHA or a visiting member of Congress. So they would make makeshift pieces of cloth that they would put across their nose and mouth. Women told me that with those long hours, at times you become exhausted and the needle will just go right through your finger. There's counters over the sewing machines that tell how many pieces of a garment they've completed in an hour. And if you aren't meeting that quota, you may not be eligible for overtime. You may not be eligible at the end of the year for your contract to be renewed. There's constant pressure on these women to be working like machines.
The Marianas are a commonwealth. They're an American territory, so American immigration laws do not apply in the Marianas. So a lot of the women who are workers at these clothing factories come from other countries, China, the Philippines, Thailand, I believe, as well. These women are poor, and they come to the Marianas thinking that they'll find better work there. But they come as guest workers. Rebecca, what does that mean?
Well, what that means is that they are only there at the behest of their employer. And if their employer doesn't want them there anymore, they have to leave. And one thing that is critical to understand about this dynamic, which sets up a situation which has been compared to something like indentured servitude, is that for the privilege of getting a job in the United States, these women pay recruitment fees, which can be upwards of $7,000. They come from poor villages. The garment workers mostly come from China. They don't have that kind of money. If they work in a factory in China, they're making about 60 cents an hour. So they borrow this money either from their family, often from their entire village. Often they borrow it from Chinese mafia moneylenders who can charge, I was told, up to 20% interest. So these women come over with these huge, huge debts that they have to repay. And they can't afford to lose their jobs. And that sets up a system of incredible vulnerability. We think, before I went over there, I thought, who wants to work 20 hours a day? That's awful. But no, these women want to work as much as they possibly can to pay back those fees, because until they pay back those fees, they can't start even saving any money. And because they're there as guests, their contract is only for a year at a time, and then they may get the chance to get their contract renewed. Women are usually told by their recruiters, oh, you'll be able to stay for several years. But if they do something wrong, if they say they don't want to work that overtime, if they get pregnant and decide to keep their child, they're mostly asked to leave. In every case, actually, they were told, as I was told, they were asked to leave.
Is this only if they're single or if they're married too?
If they're married as well. As a guest worker, their employers are responsible for all their medical care as well. And their employers don't want to deal with anyone who's sick, and they don't want to deal with paying for a pregnancy. And so women just have a general expectation that they're going to have to get an abortion. I was taken on a little abortion clinic tour, and I went and saw at least four different places that outside our signs that say massage oils, Chinese medicine, acupuncture clinics. And you apparently can go. It's very easy. You go into one of these clinics and you get a pill. It's what we would call in this country a medical abortion. And you get some pills and then you will have an abortion there. And, of course, these are people that running these clinics that have no – there's no oversight. They don't have any certification to be doing these sorts of procedures.
Rebecca, were there other themes that emerged from interviewing, and you interviewed about 30 women who were guest workers in the Marianas?
I would say that the sense of desperation is palpable. The fear of these women are palpable. They don't want their photo taken. They are living in a lot of poverty because of this pressure to pay back this money. I visited one night, Martin and I went. It was a rainy night. We went down this dirt road to visit where some of these women are living, who have chosen not to live in the factory-owned barracks where they would have to pay money that was taken out of their salaries. They instead are choosing to live in places where corrugated tin roofs, the concrete slabbed floor, the quote-unquote kitchen are just a few hot plates on a slab of concrete and some water and plastic buckets, 9 people sharing one toilet. They can't afford to really buy much food, and so they just are living on frozen vegetables that they buy.
So the kinds of problems that you're talking about, bad working conditions, guest workers who are virtually indentured servants, women who get pregnant and feel like they have to have an abortion or else they'll lose their job. With the reforms that were proposed in Congress, the reforms that were blocked by Tom DeLay with Jack Abramoff, would those reforms have addressed the kind of problems that you're talking about?
Yes, significantly so. First, just increasing the minimum wage would have made these women's lives so much easier to pay them at least the $5.15 that is the minimum wage standard here in the States.
So these reforms would say that American labor laws would have to apply to the territory of the Mariana
exactly.
Islands.
Exactly. And many more resources were needed to make sure that these laws, not only minimum wage, but OSHA laws for safe working conditions. And if a worker filed a complaint, that they couldn't be fired and summarily deported. All of those kinds of issues could be addressed through these reform bills that dealt with both the immigration as well as the minimum wage. And so, and by the way, these reforms are still languishing in Congress. Congress could still act to correct these situations so that women there have a more decent life and are not abused so by these employers.
What about American immigration law? Would they apply, would those laws apply to the Mariana Islands if the reform bills were passed? And would that affect the virtual indentured servitude that the guest workers face there?
The immigration reforms would help enormously as well. It would ensure that these kinds of shadow contracts where the workers were having to sign secret agreements to get abortions if they became pregnant and other, you know, not to complain if they were not treated well. And then if they're not treated well and they file a complaint, if U.S. immigration law applied, they couldn't be summarily deported and sent back to their homeland owing these huge debts that Rebecca was talking about. So those kinds of reforms are critically needed to correct these abuses. The other immigration reforms would bring about less sex trafficking. Not only are sex workers on the island, many of these garment workers are former garment workers, but many of them are trafficked, underage girls as well, trafficked to the Marianas, told they're going to be working in restaurants or hotels and end up working in brothels. Those kinds of abuses, too, would then come under our own immigration authorities and could be addressed.
Although Jack Abramoff and Tom DeLay were successful in blocking legislation that would have reformed conditions in the clothing factories in the Marianas, recently there were some changes made. Anyways, the Marianas were always exempt from certain tariffs because they're a territory of the United States, so they weren't subjected to those tariffs. How did the GATT treaty last year level the playing field?
What that meant is that since those tariffs that had been applicable to Chinese or Vietnamese companies, it had meant that it made a lot of sense for them to set up shop in the Mariana Islands because they didn't have to pay those fees anymore. But once those tariffs were lifted, why set up shop in the Mariana Islands where even though it's a substandard minimum wage, you have to pay workers $3.05 an hour? You could set up that factory in China and pay workers 60 cents an hour, and you aren't, because there's the GATT treaty has been lifted, they don't have to have a quota system, they don't have to pay those additional fees. So it drove away the incentive that a lot of businesses had for setting up garment factories in the Marianas.
So are garment factories in the Marianas closing down now?
The factories are closing down by quite a bit, in fact. And what that means is that you have this glut of workers. Even though factories are closing down, there's still an incentive for the recruiters in China who get a cut and some money from all of those fees that the women are paying to bring them over. So they're still continuing to bring people over to the islands, even if there's not necessarily jobs, even if those factories know that they're going to close up shop in a month or 2 months after these women arrive. And so you have all these people who are on the Mariana Islands as guest workers who are desperate to find jobs. Again, they have those big fees. They have to pay them back. This is basically a big coral reef, these islands. There's no natural resource extraction to speak of. And the other real industry on the island is tourism. There are big hotels that serve mainly Japanese and Korean tourists. But there are not that many jobs, especially for Chinese workers who may not have very good English. So what people end up doing is there's a thriving sex industry on the island. There's a red light district called the Garapan. And you walk around at 7 o'clock at night, and there are former garment workers who are now working as prostitutes.
Are there still bills before Congress now proposing reform in the Marianas?
There's still interest in Congress to reform the situation in the Marianas and, frankly, to also address the fact that so many of these workers are now stranded there as the garment industry is closing factories. So there's tremendous interest, bills even that just continue to sit there, but no real effort to move them still, even though Abramoff is now out of the picture and Tom DeLay will soon resign. It's going to take a push. It's going to take outrage by people in this country who believe what has happened there is horrible and that the U.S. Could still act to correct the situation. And we hope that this attention, renewed attention, is maybe going to spur interest in correcting the situation there. We also need, Terry, an investigation of what happened there. You know, most of what's come out on these Abramoff scandals has to do with gambling interests here in the United States. But real people were terribly hurt by these scandals. Thousands and thousands of women who toiled in these factories making clothing for the American marketplace.
Now, the government of the Marianas apparently now wants Jack Abramoff's lobbying firm to pay back millions that the government paid his company. The government is now saying that Jack Abramoff's firm overbilled the government. What's that about?
Well, it's interesting because they certainly got what they paid for, which is no reforms ever got through the United States Congress. Those are some of the questions that should be looked at either in congressional hearings or an independent counsel should be appointed to investigate what happened to those fees. Were they used to pay for trips, which is not permitted? Who was paying for all those trips to the Marianas by these members of Congress and their staffs and their families? And what other money might have been paid? We know the garment industry paid at least $650,000 into the U.S. Family Network, which is a nonprofit that was set up by Tom DeLay and some of his key people, Ed Buckham, former chief of staff, very involved with Abramoff. So, you know, where was this money going and where did it end up? There doesn't seem to be much focus on that. We're looking instead at the Indian gambling interests in the U.S., but what about the Marianas and what's going to happen to these women who are stranded there now? What can be done to help them?
The article in Ms. quotes a letter Jack Abramoff wrote to the governor of the Marianas in which he said, "We've worked with the White House Office of Presidential Personnel to ensure that the Mariana relevant positions at various agencies are not awarded to enemies of the Marianas." What do you know about that note?
Yes, Jack Abramoff was bragging about yet another success that he pulled off for the Marianas. When Bush was elected president and decisions were being made who to place into the appointed positions at the Department of the Interior, which had oversight of the Marianas, and the Department of the Labor, which, of course, deals with minimum wage as well as violations of labor laws, to be sure that some of Abramoff's former law partners or people who were on his lobbying team at Greenberg Traurig and the Gates Law Firm, in fact, got appointments. Assistant Secretary of Labor was a former Abramoff associate. Appointments at the Department of the Interior, former associates of Abramoff. So he was very quick to make sure that he was able to influence some of these appointments in the new Bush administration to make sure that regulatory action wouldn't be taken or investigations wouldn't be launched into what was happening in the Marianas.
After I read your article, I noticed that I have some T-shirts that say "Made in the Marianas (parentheses USA)." Why don't you explain the changes that labeling has gone through from clothing that is made in factories in the Marianas?
Actually, I mean, they could still just say made in the USA if they wanted to, but under tremendous pressure, frankly, brought about by a lawsuit, a class action lawsuit on behalf of the workers in the Marianas, Global Exchange, Sweatshop Watch, Unite, the labor union that deals with garment industry, brought lawsuits against the factory owners in the Marianas, challenging their labor violations, some of the immigration violations as well, but also challenging their right to claim that their garments were made in the USA. And so under real pressure, the garment industry began changing all of that. And today, most of the garments that are manufactured there do say made in Saipan, parentheses USA, or made in the Northern Marianas, parentheses USA. So at least you now know where those garments are coming from. But I think a lot of consumers were fooled into thinking that they were buying clothing that was made by USA workers in USA factories with decent standards, never even dreaming that they were supporting a sweatshop, virtually slave labor situation on a territory of the United States.
Well, thank you for talking with us about this story in Ms. Magazine. Thank you both.
Thank you, Terry.
Catherine Spiller is the executive editor of Ms. Magazine. Rebecca Claren wrote the article we've been discussing on the Mariana Islands.